Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. What you're going to hear today is a show recorded just before the Dallas-Chicago game with Bulls historian, NBA historian Tim Gallagher. And he gives out his midseason grades, and I add my input at the midway point. We were 21-21, a 500 team. We got about 75% of the way done before we had to cut it short. We're going to have part two probably early next week where we finish up the first semester grades. And then, I watched the Dallas-Chicago disappointing loss at home. This team is just so frustrating how we could beat teams like Toronto and the Cavs twice, consistently beat good teams, Utah, and then lose to teams like Dallas at home. It's just beyond belief, and it was a really tough loss when you consider the Bulls had the lead with a few seconds left, and Wes Matthews hits a three. Sure seemed like Wes Matthews wanted that game more than the other Bull. Just in my opinion, played incredible defense down the stretch, diving on the floor. He just seems like Wes Matthews wanted that game more than anyone else, and I give a lot of credit to him because that was some of the best defense I've seen all season. It's right up there with Tony Allen or anyone else I've seen as far as a perimeter defender who just wanted to make a difference and absolutely did as he basically on the last shot tipped the ball away from Butler, who went to Wade for an open corner J that he missed on his birthday. So just a really disappointing gut punch loss here, and the Bulls are in a tough position. Do we rebuild or do we, you know, still go for the playoffs right now as I record this on Friday, where we do have the eighth seed. But it's a tough decision, and hopefully John Paxson will make the right one. So let's go into the grades. All the best. You guys follow us on Twitter at CBEFred, at CBEFred. Email the show at ChicagoBullseye@gmail.com. And yesterday, really quick, I also interviewed Roland Lazenby, a great, prolific NBA author who's wrote many books, including the best Jordan book I've read. You'll have that interview probably over the weekend posted. So talk to you soon. All the best to you. Have a great weekend, and go Bulls. Tim Gallagher, basketball historian, joins the Chicago Bullseye. Tim, it's been forever. I'm so glad to have you back on. Looking forward to getting your opinion on the beloved Bulls and the NBA in general. We're at the midpoint of the season, so I thought we'd jump into the midterm grades for the team, coaching staff, and also NBA surprises and disappointments so far this year. How you doing, brother? What's going on?
I'm doing well, Fred. Happy New Year. I know it's 17 days into the year and time flies, but wish you and the listeners all the best for a healthy and successful 2017.
That sounds great. That sounds great. And, you know, the Bulls right now at that midway point, 21-21. We got a game tonight against Dallas that you hope we're going to win. You never know with this team. Seems like they play their best against the good teams and the worst against the worst ones. But, you know, I am kind of bullish again when you consider the fact that when Jimmy's been healthy, which hasn't been a lot lately, he's been under the weather, but in those games where he's been healthy, they've won five straight. And four of those games were against very good teams in Toronto, Cleveland, at Memphis, and the Charlotte Hornets. You know, what do you think about the team so far at the midway point? And then we'll delve into the grades.
Sure. Well, they have been a little bit of a tease, and when we get to the grades, they're, you know, just that inconsistency is what's frustrating because, as you mentioned, they're going to beat some of the elite teams in the league. You rattled off the names of those, but then they'll be the mediocre performances where they might eke out a win against Brooklyn, or those, what I call them, kind of, you know, punch to the gut losses to the Timberwolves and Knicks, right? Because, you know, part of the Timberwolves is because they were, especially at that time, one of the worst records in the league, and then with Thibodeau, and then having a big lead in that game, and then, of course, losing to the Knicks, who are a struggling team, but then that Rose and Noah are there. Just those kind of losses just seem to rub a little salt in the wound. It's disappointing enough when they get beat by anyone, but those losses were pretty painful. So, yeah, just that unpredictability night in and night out, because we see what they're capable of and beating really good teams. And Jimmy, you know, is at times in the MVP discussion in the league. I think there's a handful of players at least that are above him. But the fact that he's realistically in those discussions shows you, when he's healthy, what an impact player he is. And we'll get to the grades of all the players individually as well. So, you know, at the beginning of the season when we had our predictions, I said the Bulls would be 45-37 this year. So obviously they're trending a little behind what I predicted. But if you look at where they are now at 21-21, at 500, they lost Michael Carter-Williams for a big chunk of time. They lost Doug for a chunk of time with the concussion issues. And just integrating some of the new pieces, you know, veterans like Wade and Rondo and Lopez, you know, they have to go 24-16 the rest of the way to get to that 45-37 prediction. That's probably a little ambitious, but I don't think totally unrealistic. Just as teams are trying to jockey for position in the East, obviously Atlanta and Boston have kind of made a move in the positive lately, but as far as the rest of the spots between the Bulls, Hornets, Bucks, Wizards, Pacers, I mean, it's really all up for grabs. And so, you know, I don't think it's time to blow it up. I think there's still some achievement ahead here, and just getting in the playoffs, and you obviously don't want to get in that eighth spot and get Cleveland in the first round, but the Bulls have played well against Toronto, and you get in the playoffs, and as long as you're not playing Cleveland in the first round, almost anything can happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that, you know, there are only a few games, or I think it's less than a game last time I looked, behind the fifth seed, right? If you get in that fifth seed, fourth seed, somehow get into that third seed, I don't think that's likely. But, you know, four or five is definitely in the realm of possibility here. I think you could get past the first round, and then obviously you'd face Cleveland in round two, and that would be a tough ask, right? So you might even be better off, you know, trying to figure out a way to play Toronto. But, you know, the fact is, this team has been very good against Cleveland and Toronto over the past 2 years, and they've won a lot of regular season games. I know that won't mean much in the playoffs, but I don't think anybody's going to want to play the Bulls with Jimmy and Wade, you know, two real superstars in the playoffs. Those are the two best combo, I'd say, outside of, you know, LeBron and Kyrie and Love. You know, so I still think they're a dangerous team in the playoffs. I know some people might argue the Bucks with, you know, Giannis and but I still think the Bulls are probably going to be the second scariest team in the playoffs outside, or third scariest, outside of the Raptors and Cleveland. And I think they could beat the Raptors. I think the only team they can't beat is Cleveland right now. But if they can get that far, if they can somehow, you know, get to, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals against Cleveland, I'd consider this season a success. And I think it really, you know, bode well for bringing in free agents or somebody, a difference maker next year.
I agree. And with that, why don't we kind of get into the grading of the team? So I have them at a C, which is average, and 21-21 is average. But as we said, it's certainly in the middle of the pack in the East. And again, other than Cleveland, I don't think any of those teams are daunting. Certainly Brad Stevens, as we mentioned, is kind of working his magic a little bit, and the Celtics have been trending up. They won 8 out of 10. I've been kind of surprised the Hawks, where it looked like they struggled and were you know, kind of hit a little rough patch, and then they trade Korver, but they just keep on winning. And even the ex-Bull Dunleavy had a big game a couple of games ago, so he resurfaced. But again, I don't know how sustainable all that is with those teams. And, you know, again, the Wizards have gotten hot. They've won 7 out of 10. And I just heard that they've won 12 in a row on their home court. So, you know, when I hear things like that and see that the Bulls, you know, are 13-8 at home, which is, you know, which is decent, but I'd really like to see that, especially that home court record, be much more dominant.
Agreed. So why don't we get into, let's start out with, you know, the player. How did you want to go about this? Alphabetical order? I mean, do you have a list there in front of you that you wanted to go player by player?
I do. Yeah, I have a list, and we can just go through it kind of rapid fire. I'll give give the grade and then why I assess them at that grade, and you can let me know your degree, disagree, and put it up for a little discussion. So
sounds good.
Yeah, so with Hoiberg, kind of same as the team, I give him a C. I gave him some plus points for navigating through the McDermott and Michael Carter-Williams injuries, and also keeping the team together when Rondo kind of went off the grid for a little bit there. I guess the negative is just his ability to utilize Rondo, and because I think he's one of the players that's definitely underperformed, even given his age and status in the league at this point. And the other negative I have against Fred is just their readiness, or lack of readiness is probably a better way to put it, against the non-top-tier teams, like what we just talked about. So if they can be, and I know there's going to be some teams where you just don't match up well and things like that, but there's been a number of games where they just didn't appear to be ready to play against a team that was very beatable, especially teams at home. So that's where I give Fred a C at this point, which obviously is not what we'd hoped for, but there were times where it looked like it could have sunk deeper than that, and it looks like it appears they've weathered that storm. They've kind of got Rondo back in the mix. I don't know if that's going to be sustainable the rest of the season, but they've got Michael Carter-Williams playing now. McDermott's healthy, coming off a great game against Memphis. So I think, as we discussed, a playoff spot and even a potentially a maybe a four seed is certainly achievable.
So I agree. Let me jump in on that with Fred. Some good things I think he's done is it looks like he's really actively trying to get McDermott in the post. I feel that's a good move for Doug's development. Doug's got an excellent post game. He looked fantastic in Q4 in the post against the Charlotte Hornets in a game where Jimmy had 52. He looked great the other night in the post. In his career high game, in the win at Memphis, some creative things there. But overall, I saw Paul Zipser play for Windy City, the Bulls, developmental league team, on a Saturday night, and I really, in all honesty, I wasn't that impressed defensively. I thought his lateral quickness was just he needed to get better. Let's just put it that way. And then my friend texted me saying that he's starting. And I assumed he was starting for Windy City. Had no idea he'd be starting for the Bulls. And it's just, to me, insanity. You don't start Doug McDermott. I know you like him coming off the bench. That's a ridiculous excuse. You got to have Doug out there to start the game. He's better than Paul Zipser. And Paul Zipser is just not ready to play meaningful minutes in the NBA. I also want him to find a way to get more minutes for Valentine. I think Valentine started to show development. And he just can't seem to find regular minutes for him, and it just drives me nuts. I thought he hung way too long with Cannon, played a lot more than he should have. So I go C minus with Coach Fred. He doesn't have a roster that he'd ideally want. He obviously wants more shooting, more athleticism, but overall, C minus.
Right. So seems like we're on the same page there. So now let's move into the roster. So with Jimmy, that's a pretty easy one. I gave him an A. He's played great when healthy. He's been in the discussion, like we talked about, for MVP of the league. He's definitely assumed the alpha dog role, which for some reason that seemed to be in question last year with him and Derrick Rose. And obviously the way things have played out with both players, there's no doubt who the right alpha dog and choice for the Bulls was, and they got Jimmy there to do that. So he's definitely lived up to expectations, taken the baton from Wade and I guess from Rose in some ways to lead the team. And then just his ability to close out games, to have that go-to scorer. And a lot of those games, everyone in the building knows he's going to have the ball and it's going to be up to him, and he still delivers. So that shows you his level of excellence. So giving Jimmy an A, and excited to see his development. And I still have to remind myself sometimes that what meager statistics he put up his first few years in the league, right? That this has really come from a guy that barely averaged a couple of points a game as a rookie year to now being in the discussion for a top top 10 player in the league.
Agree completely. Nothing really much to add other than, he's right there in the top five for best two-way players. He brings it on the offensive end and the defensive end, what a lot of guys don't. Harden's probably better offensively, but he's nowhere near as good as Jimmy defensively. So Jimmy Butler's just fantastic, and I think he's passed up Paul George as probably the second best player in the East. I know a lot of people like to throw it, Giannis out there. I still think he's maybe a year or two away.
Right, and I think DeRozan has stepped up his game a little bit too. He's another guy that comes to mind at that, but certainly that's taken nothing away from what Jimmy's done. Okay, good. Then we'll move on to D. Wade. So I've got him at a solid B+, and the reason I have that is he's still putting up numbers at his age, right? 19-4-4 is good for any player of any age in the league. I know, obviously, he's not playing the second of back-to-backs, but I know there was a lot of skepticism coming into the season about his age. Could he keep it up? Last year at Miami, did he top out? And so overall, I think he's delivered on what my expectations were and how he's played. I'd still like to see a little more on the leadership side. And if they had maybe another four wins or so on the ledger, I would maybe move that up to an A. But I give him a solid B+.
I would agree, too. I think his intangibles are still an A+. Setting an example to how to act like a professional, preparation. You just hear it over and over again. I think he's been huge for Jimmy Butler. I think a big reason he's taken that jump is due to Dwayne Wade's presence on the court, attracting attention, still playing at a high level. He's older, so he's 35. He's going to miss every other game, and back-to-backs, et cetera. But overall, he's played at a high level, and it's not just the intangibles. I think his game on the court, he's had some great nights. He had another great night the other night against New Orleans in a Q4, really kind of win that game for us. So I love Dwayne Wade. I'm so happy he's here, and I think his contract's a bargain for everything he brings big picture.
Agreed. We're definitely on the same page with that. The next player I have on the list is Rondo, which I've graded him at a D, and that's a D for disappointing as well. Just because I expect a little bit more, especially what's at stake at this stage of his career. And we've talked about that on past podcasts, right? When Sacramento has basically put you out to pasture, you better step it up. And I've said that this is, if I'm not mistaken, one of probably his last chance to play with a top-tier franchise and team. So the fact that he had the meltdown with Coach Borla in that incident was a little unsettling. They seem to have navigated that. But on court, he's just been average. And obviously when they sat him and Michael Carter-Williams took a more prominent role, came back from his injury, the team certainly played better. Even in losses, I thought they played better. And just the offensive flow and the way they played. I guess to Rondo's credit, he stayed engaged even when he was benched. And I know he was saying in the media there wasn't a lot of communication happening in terms of what his role was and what his future was. I don't know how valid all of that is, but we'll take him for his word on it. But he did seem to stay engaged on the bench. He seemed to remain a good teammate. And when called into action, in the game at Memphis, for example, he played all right. So, but overall, a disappointment and not what I had hoped for from Rondo.
Yeah, I would agree. I give him a C- just because I think he's gotten a little bit of unfair criticism overall. I think people are just so negative on him beforehand and just a negative opinion of him. He's still top 10 in the NBA in assists. In relatively limited minutes. I think he's been really good on the second unit right now, and I'm hoping he keeps this up and has a good attitude as far as kind of leading that second unit and really dishing out passes. I think he's been good for Doug. And as far as a teammate, I went to the Windy City game last Saturday, or it was a week ago Saturday. I can't remember the exact date. The night before, Bobby Portis had played for Windy City. He had one game for the Developmental League team. And Rondo apparently had driven out to Hoffman Estates to go to the game to support Bobby Portis. That's incredible to me that you know, an NBA player would take his time, a veteran, to drive out and support his teammate. I think that says a lot about him. It seems like most of the comments have been extremely positive from Jimmy Butler to Dwayne Wade about Rondo. So I'll give him a little bit higher grade, but I agree, he's been a disappointment on the court overall.
Right. I'm with you there. I hadn't heard the story about him going out to support Portis, and that's really encouraging and great to hear that. And again, what I spotted of him on the bench, even those games where he was odd man out, he seemed to be genuinely supportive of his teammates and, you know, greeting guys when they're coming off the bench during, you know, at timeouts and things like that. So I notice all those little details, and beyond just if he's doing it, does it appear genuine? So, so
how do you like him in this backup role as kind of like leading the second unit?
Well, it seems to be working. I think Michael Carter Williams is deserving of that starting role now, the way he's played, and having Rondo off the bench with that second unit, and you know, and I kind of like the energy of that second unit, and when they've played that mix of young guys, you know, depending on who else on the floor, it's certainly fun to watch. I don't know the exact mix and what minutes all these combinations have had, but you know, with Rondo, Doug, Grant, Felicio, and you know, and maybe, I don't know, Nico is the fifth, or even Michael Carter Williams. But they've got a younger, but maybe going small, where Lopez or Taj isn't in there. That's kind of a fun unit and an energetic unit that's out there. So, I think that's a good way for him to stay engaged and maybe, you know, work his way back to even more minutes. And you know, I think playing that role is certainly better than not playing at all. So as long as he buys into that, I think we're good.
Great.
The next player I've got is Taj. So, you know, probably not a whole lot to talk about with there. I've got him as a high B+, you know, just shy of an A, just because he's been a very consistent player, somebody you can really count on, a very solid 12.7 rebounds a game, and, pretty relentless effort on the boards, and the Bulls have been a very good rebounding team, especially offensive rebounding, and certainly he's a big part of that, so like what I've seen with Taj, and just have him, I hope he just keeps it up.
Yeah, I'm going to give him an A+. I've been really impressed with Taj Gibson this year. I think for most of the season he's played at almost an all-star level. He's shooting 52% from the field, which is phenomenal. He's played in all 42 games. Him and Lopez are the only two guys on the team who's made it to every game. I can't ask anything more from what he's done. I think he's been fantastic defensively, a great offensive rebounder. He's hit his shots. He's hitting a decent rate at the free throw line, just over 70%. I love Taj Gibson, and he's a winner off the court, too. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I know there'll definitely probably be a market for Taj Gibson, especially before the All-Star break. He's a free agent at the end of the year, so we'll see what happens. But, you know, I can't say enough good things about Taj Gibson. He gets an A+ from me.
Right, and I may have graded him a little low at a B plus. And when you put it in the sense of what more could he give you night in and night out, and when I think of it on those terms, I think you're right. I mean, that really is an A performance from Taj. And yeah, he seems to improve that little mid range jumper. I commented earlier in the season that it looked like his footwork down in the post has even improved. So yeah, really like what he's given us. So. You mentioned he's playing all the games as well, just like the next guy on the list here, which is Robin Lopez. So I give him a solid B just because of his consistency and durability. I'd like to see his field goal percentage, you know, inch up a little bit for a post player. I know he's not a scorer and, you know, doesn't have a real delicate touch around the basket, but would just like to see him maybe get a couple more hoops a game on putbacks or, you know, on screen roll type things. I know that's not his bread and butter, but I think if he could inch his scoring up a couple of points a game, I think that would be welcome productivity from the Bulls. But again, when you look at his durability and productivity, especially what we had to deal with Noah the last few years with all the injuries. It's just refreshing that there's a guy in the post that you can count on night after night to play. And again, he also seems like a really good teammate on the floor. He's an excellent screener. I know there's not really a stat for that, but just seems to make good decisions out there as well. And you know, there's probably, like with Taj, there's probably not much more you can really ask of him, but I'm going to give him a real solid B.
Yeah, I'll give him a B+, too. I think he started out really strong. He's one of the best offensive rebounders in the league. He's a big reason why we're so good at on the offensive rebounding side of the ball, in rebounding in general. He's relentless on the offensive boards. My concern is with Lopez, he's starting to see it lately, is, you know, some of these matchups where guys are going smaller with big men that could really move and hit the three and kind of bring him out to the perimeter, his effectiveness is kind of mitigated against those type of players. But, you know, against Memphis, you know, Gasol, I thought he played really well. I thought he had a couple really nice games. And overall, I love him. I think he's a great addition to the team. I think he's on a bargain contract. But he's really a matchup player. And when we play some of these big, you know, like, for example, Golden State, he's not going to be on the court that much. He just can't hang with that kind of speed.
Right. No, I agree. But again, I like that acquisition when you figure you got
absolutely
got him and Grant, who we'll get to in a minute for Rose. That's
I think he's been improving on Noah. Noah the last 2 years just wasn't the same guy. And
right.
Robin Lopez is not as good as Noah in 2013-14, but he is, you know, better than Noah the last 2 years.
Agreed. Okay, next I've got Michael Carter-Williams, MCW. He obviously missed a big chunk of time due to injury, so that affects the grade a little bit just because he hasn't been on the court as much as we would like, but I thought he's been very productive when healthy. So I give him a very solid B as well. I like his versatility. I like his offensive pace. You know, obviously he's not a natural scorer, and, you know, his touch both on outside shots and around the basket is a little lacking. But I think he makes up for that just in terms of his youth and his ability to bother guards on the other team defensively with his length and aggressiveness. And again, where the NBA is looking at hybrid-type players that we've talked about, you know, I think he's a guy based on his length, and he seems to have a very solid basketball IQ as well. Just, you know, he's a guy that can guard 1-2s and 3s, and so I just like his versatility, and the Bulls seem to take a little bit of a turn for the better when he started, well, number one, got healthy, but then started getting more minutes.
No, agreed. I think he's one of the few guys on the team that can really wow you with athletic plays. You know, like, it's probably him and Butler. The Bulls aren't loaded with athleticism. He injects a badly needed dose of that. I love how he pushes the ball. I love how he plays defense. I love how he rebounds. I love how he passes. I don't love how he shoots. That's the big negative on him. You know, for that, I agree. I'd probably give him a B-. But I thought moving into the starting lineup was the right move. I really like him ideally as a backup. I think on a team next year, if we can get an upgrade at the point guard position and bring him off the bench, that's his best role.
I agree. But I'm fine with him this year with that lineup, especially, you know, when you have a lineup with him, you know, if you go smaller, let's say, and have Taj at the five, and you've got a lineup with Jimmy, D-Wade, Michael Carter-Williams, and McDermott, I like that five, you know, and I think that's a very competitive team with a number of different, players that can hurt you. So, which that takes us to Doug McDermott, who, you know, I have to qualify that Doug's been one of my favorite players since I saw him play at Creighton. And as you mentioned, I like how they've started to utilize him in some different areas of the floor, because the teams that are alert defensively and have scouted right just don't give him any daylight, right? And so his shots are a little more rushed than other times. So I think getting a little inside-out type of aspect to his game, and he does have a variety of ways he can score. We saw it in college. Obviously, it's a big leap to the NBA, but when there's mismatches. He's got somebody smaller. He can post up. He's got a little, you know, the step back shot. You know, he's got a lot of things in his arsenal besides just standing at the 3-point line and knocking down shots. However, I do think he's underperformed overall. I've given him a C. Part of that is I know he missed a chunk of time due to the concussions, and I don't know how much of a setback that really was for him. I'm sure it was some. But and when you see him play like he did the other night at Memphis with 31 points, and I know that was a career-high game for him, but that kind of let me see the best in what he can do. And when I say that, I mean chasing shots, really being aggressive, looking for shots, even taking some bad shots, you know, in a game. But, you know, the fact that he's at 10 points a game, I mean, I really think he should be a 15-point-a-game scorer. You know, he really has the ability to do that. And he, you know, I think he's underperforming in that way. I'm glad he's healthy. Hopefully he can propel himself from this excellent road game at Memphis. But at this point, I have to give him a C. But, again, I still think he's on the upswing. He looks more athletic, you know, each year that he's been taking care of his body. He's getting some dunks in traffic. And, there's elements he's adding to his game and athleticism as well for, you know, probably a guy who's not naturally that athletic. So I love the work ethic. I love the improvement. I guess I just have a little bit higher expectations than what he's delivered so far.
I agree with everything you said. I think one of the underrated aspects of his game is he moves extremely well off the ball. I think he's shown that quite a bit this year as far as some really nice cuts, moving off of picks. I've always said I think his ceiling is a more athletic, better version of Kyle Korver. He can post up. He's got some incredible moves down low. I really like him down low, and I'm glad you're starting to go to him more there. But his inconsistency has been maddening. He had 11 points against the Charlotte Hornets on the 3-game winning streak. He had 11 versus Charlotte, 17 versus the Cavs in a win, and 17 versus Toronto in a win. And then he just comes back with four, you know, complete stinkers. And I know Jimmy was out in those games, and he might have been drawing a better defender on the perimeter, but if he had an average game against Washington, he'd win that game on the road without Jimmy and without Wade. He was awful in that game. So I love Doug McDermott. I expect more from him. I give him a C2. I think he will play better. I want him to shoot 40% from the 3-point line. And I think, you know, brighter days are ahead. I disagree with everyone who is constantly critiquing that trade. Gary Harris and Nurkic. I mean, I still think that he's better than anyone picked in that draft. I think he's going to be better than Gary Harris when all is said and done, better than Nurkic when all is said and done. So I'm really looking forward to him improving and continuing to improve throughout the year.
Right, and he's still a young player in the league, right, even though he was a four-year college player. And like I said, there's been things he's done to show improvement. So, I think Doug is still on the upswing to more success. Okay, we'll keep this moving. The next, I've got Nico, which we've talked about our frustration with him on previous podcasts, and I give him a grade of D just because of his poor shooting percentage, his poor decision making, and, you know, meaning I can't really trust him late in games to make the right choice or make a conservative choice, especially, you know, with the other players that are on the floor, and just his overall inconsistency and lack of improvement, I guess, where, you know, he showed some signs last year, and I think among some of the Bulls' young players, he's taken the most noticeable step back, especially for a rotation player.
Agree 100%. You can't be shooting 31% from three after, you know, having a really nice season last year, shooting 39%. 39 to 31% from three is a precipitous drop. It's a massive decline, and I have no idea why. You know, he's getting a lot more open looks. I know his shot selection is poor, but just overall, you got to play better. And I'm tired of making excuses for him. I do like him. I do think he's got a tremendous amount of talent. I think he'll come around, but you got to play better. And I think he's been a big reason why we've been so inconsistent.
Right. Well, he was definitely someone the Bulls were counting on. These next two guys I'm going to mention, I don't know that the Bulls were counting on, but I think they had hopes for for more of a performance than they've delivered, and first one is Bobby Portis. And part of it is, I know initially it was just hard for him to get minutes based on the frontline rotation, but then when he did play, he didn't show much. And as we talked about, you know, I saw him play in Las Vegas in the Summer League. He was one of the top players in Vegas in the Summer League. Now, again, I'm totally understanding the leap from Summer League games in Vegas to the league are, you know, there's a canyon there. However, you know, he showed enough in terms of rebounding skill, versatility, outside shooting that I thought, you know, he would do more than he's done this year. It seems like he's played a little bit better lately, and to his credit, where he had a lot of DNPs or very limited playing time, or when he got in garbage time, he looked kind of disengaged to me, which I know is probably hard to do mentally, to come in during garbage time and be focused and perform. So the fact that he's played a little bit better lately when he's gotten some minutes is encouraging that he's, either the staff is working with him and keeping him into it mentally, and, you know, and there's still, you know, potentially some days ahead. But I still give him a D. That's probably a little harsh just based on him being a second-year player and a guy that left college a year early. But I expect a little more based on the signs I saw in Summer League.
Okay, next one.
Next I've got Jerian Grant, who actually I think has been a pleasant surprise. I gave him a B. Just, you know, again, my expectations for him were not extreme. He did play pretty well in the Summer League, I thought, as well in Vegas, but I like the speed and athleticism and energy he brings off the bench. And, and it's either a second string or third string, depending on Rondo's temperature on a given night. I think he's a good asset to have on the team. And, you know, we've seen some occasional outbursts from him. You know, that win they had on the road earlier in the season in Portland was really, that was his game. You know, he was clearly the MVP of that game. So the fact that he's capable of that on occasion is encouraging. So I give Jerian Grant a solid B.
Yeah, I'd give him a B. Back to Portis real quick. I'd give him a D. I'm just so disappointed in the guy. I think he plays like he's 5'11". He's got very little athleticism. His defense has been absolutely atrocious this year. And I remember you always said, and I agreed with you, when we drafted Bobby Portis, that he could be Robert Horry. That's the guy you want him to be, a guy who can hit shots, extend the defense, and he just hasn't brought that. You know, he just hasn't, and he's been extremely disappointing. Jerian Grant, he's had a couple really good games, but, you know, I'm not expecting much from that kid. And, I think he's done a solid job, but, you know, he's not a guy I expected to be in rotation. And, you know, I think he's, for expectations, he's probably right where I expected him. Tim, I hate to do this, but I got to cut this short. Can we continue the grades and the surprises and disappointments in the first half on a later show?
Absolutely, Fred. No problem. I know we covered a lot already on this show. So, yeah, there's just a few other players toward the end of the bench we haven't gotten to, and then we can get to the other midseason grades and assessments on the next podcast. That's fine.
Sounds great. The NBA at large, and really get into deep issues in the first half and kind of like what you foresee for the second half. So really enjoyed having you on again, Tim. All the best to you, brother, and we'll talk again soon. Go Bulls.
Okay, Fred. Take care.
Bye-bye.